The Monty Show on a Tuesday, back from hiatus, a little traveling and stuff. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about. This NCAA scandal is very clearly front and center in a lot of people's minds, especially at Arizona with Sean Miller. Was he on a wiretap? Was he not? ESPN, you dastardly fools, lying like idiots, or just being wrong. We'll talk all about that. LeBron's in on it. Jalen Rose called NCAA athletics indentured servitude things today. Got to talk that. We got to talk the MLB grievance. Utah drivers allowed to run red lights legally. Like, there's just a lot to get to today. I ask Jake every day what song we're playing, but I don't need to today. What's up with the Nirvana today, man?
You just got to do it. You just have to do it every once in a while.
All right, you have to follow the show on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show on Twitter. Let's get into this NCAA scandal. Let's get into this Sean Miller thing, because I think it truly is one of the hottest topics in sports right now. Everybody's out talking about this. And if you don't know the story, just let me put it together for you. You remember in the fall that there was this situation where Book Richardson, amongst other NCAA assistant coaches and personnel, got caught up in a you know, really an FBI, what would you call it, sting?
Yeah, of sorts.
Yeah, to uncover scandals and cheating.
I mean,
and yeah, the FBI investigated cheating and misgivings in college athletics, and this college basketball scandal has mushroomed into a huge deal.
Yeah.
So I'll focus specifically on Arizona because there's a lot of talk about Sean Miller over the last week. Book Richardson, who has been Sean Miller's lead assistant for 10 years, going all the way back to Xavier, you know, caught basically taking money, paying money, just doing whatever he had to do to get the best recruits right now to Arizona. There's a lot of Arizona fans who will tell you, oh, Book Richardson was acting as a lone wolf. Sean Miller had no idea.
Right.
Okay, we're going to get to that in a minute. Now this wiretap story. Schlabaugh from ESPN, who's a guy that I think everybody respects. He's a big name in college sports. Not a guy that you would think would put out erroneous statements or any, you know, just straight up
half-truths. He's not slapping stuff on the wall.
Yeah, this is a half-truth in my opinion. ESPN Schlabaugh comes out with a story that says Sean Miller was caught on a wiretap talking to a disgraced sports agent about paying $100,000 to get Ayton to come to Arizona. Well, then ESPN issued a correction. The dates were wrong. They didn't line up. They corrected it again. It made it worse. Sean Miller, though, when this story broke over the weekend, had to step away from the program, did not coach at Oregon, where they got beat. Ayton was allowed to play, which I think was the right thing to do. Now, yesterday, Sean Miller meets with the University of Arizona, and they're trying to decide if he's going to continue as coach or not. Meanwhile, it looks like this whole FBI wiretap story of Sean Miller getting caught on a wiretap is either complete garbage or a half-truth at very best. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. And it appears to me that, yeah, hey, maybe Sean Miller was caught on a wiretap, but I'm having a hard time believing right now anything that ESPN is saying. So I'm just going to throw the wiretap conversation out of this conversation. And I'm going to say they should still fire Sean Miller because the body of evidence is too much to ignore.
Yeah.
And if you're Arizona right now, you are in damage control with the NCAA because there's too much pressure. When you have LeBron James saying that college athletics are corrupt, when you have Jalen Rose on ESPN today saying that playing NCAA athletics is akin to indentured servitude.
That's a little strong.
It is. But he makes a good point. They're a registered 501c3. They're a charity organization who makes a ton of money. All of this pressure will come to a head and somebody's going to fall on the sword. And right now, if I had to guess, it's two schools. It's Louisville for sure. And it is Arizona. Because with Book Richardson, here's the problem for Sean Miller, and you can't get away from this. No matter what you believe about this BS wiretap story from Espen or whatever, Sean Miller had his lead assistant indicted by the government, caught up in an FBI sting. where he is, without question, violating federal law and NCAA regulations. He, Sean Miller, either did not know, if you believe this idea that Book Richardson is a lone wolf.
Yeah.
He either didn't know, which is a problem. He doesn't have control of his program.
Yeah.
Or he knew and let it go on because he wanted to win. Either way, Sean Miller's got to get fired for this.
Yeah. There's no good solution here.
Then we start adding in the different layers and the different accusations about were players paid. Was Sean Miller truly caught on a wiretap? Did he say anything wrong? The very association with this Dawkins character, who is one of the former agents, who is in neck deep here, and it has done anything. If it's possible to break the law, he essentially
He's done everything. He's been the go-between. I mean, that's who he is.
There's no happy ending here for Sean Miller.
Yeah.
So if I'm Arizona, I know the NCAA is coming because they're getting public pressure beyond belief to do something. And if I'm Arizona, I already fired Rich Rodriguez. I hired a home run in football. Sean Miller, by a lot of people's accounts, has not been the guy that they thought he was going to be. They haven't won at the level that everybody kind of thought that they would win with Sean Miller. I'm not going to go as far as to say he's been a disappointment, but he's landed them in really deep water with the NCAA right now.
Yeah.
What if you look at the pros and cons, there's a hell of a lot more reason to fire him and be proactive about cleaning up your program.
Draining the swamp.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, Donnie? Look, Donnie's going to come in here and drain the swamp. You know what I'm saying? Let Sean Miller go so that you can recover and begin anew. Because right now, if you fire Sean Miller,
you're cutting your hand off to save your arm, essentially. I mean,
you
that's
are.
What you're doing.
That's exactly right. And you're cutting your hand off knowing that you can probably still get a pretty quality head coach to come in here.
Yep.
If this program doesn't fire Sean Miller, as they did Book Richardson, and take every step away from this FBI scandal that they can, they're making a huge mistake.
Yeah. They're setting a horrible example.
I say kick Sean Miller into the middle of traffic and let him avoid the cars.
Let him play Frogger.
Yeah, let him do his own thing. You got to do for you now because you've screwed this up horribly. Because, by the way, it's partly on the University of Arizona to have an idea that Book Richardson's out there doing something.
Yeah.
I mean, I you can't tell me that Sean Miller didn't know that. I will never believe that Book Richardson or any of these other assistant coaches were lone wolf figures just trying to get theirs on the side.
Yeah, that's not.
You're not the lead assistant for a guy for about a decade, going back to Xavier. And that head coach, Sean Miller, doesn't know what he was doing. That's just not the way these things work. And here's the other thing that we need to talk about with this. It's pervasive. It is deep. It is, if you think your institution, I'm a Notre Dame fan. I believe that Notre Dame is corrupt. I believe the football program has massive NCAA violations, in my opinion, that we don't even know about. Because everybody does.
Yep.
It's steroids in baseball. Everybody was doing it. Everybody was doing it in NCAA football and basketball. If you think that this is just about basketball,
this is NCAA athletics.
You're crazy. Yeah. I mean, this is not a basketball problem. This is a sports problem in college. And all of this goes back to the fact that the NCAA are a bunch of greedy SOBs who do not want kids to profit from playing college sports. They want to put the money back in their own pockets.
Yeah.
That's the problem. How do you fix that? I think there's one change that you could make instantly that lowers the
occurrence rate.
I'm not even going to say the violations, but it lowers the influence. It lessens the influence of the agents, the financial advisors. And that is to allow the kids to make money on their own likeness, their names, their images. Let them sell trading cards. Let them sell t-shirts. Let them sign autographs.
Yeah.
Let them do what they need to do to make a living wage. That's what this is. And I think the other thing we got to stop doing, especially in basketball, we got to stop this one and done thing.
Right.
I'm not saying not to allow one and dones because I actually think it's a really important part of college basketball. But if you're going to be one and done, you need to be, you know, governed by a different set of rules. You cannot just allow these one and done kids to come in, stay in the dorms, eat at the training table, and play basketball. Never go to class, don't have to worry about being eligible. Because what does that do? That leads to Derrick Rose style ACT scores.
Yes.
That leads to SAT, you know, is it corruption of the SAT process, the ACT process? The eligibility. I
mean, you're nurturing an environment of cheating, essentially.
Of fraud. You are nurturing an environment of fraud.
I mean, that's what you're doing.
Absolutely. And that's what the NCAA is right now.
Yeah.
It's not credible. If you believe that this 1930s amateurism, these kids are just here to get an education.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. The one and dones need to be in a different category. And if you are going to be here for 1 year and then you're gone, you need to be, I think, under a real microscope.
And do you have to commit to being that guy before you go to the school?
I think you do.
For recruiting purposes.
It's almost like, the way that I have put this is, I think it's almost like being pre-med.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, hey, I want to be a doctor. Well, at the end of my freshman year, I realized that, nah, pre-med wasn't for me. I want to be a lawyer instead. Okay, well, hey, I want to be a one and done. You know, I want to be Lonzo Ball. Well, I realized, you know, after my freshman season that, you know, I want to be here. Okay, well, now we're going to change this. And if you go from a one and done, you can only convert to a four-year player.
Yeah.
You either go after the first year or you stay the whole freight. That's, in my opinion,
yeah,
there's
I think
only,
that's completely fair.
There's only two categories, right? It's one and done or four-year athletes.
Right.
And that puts to bed a lot of this corruption because we're not here to get educations anymore. These one and done players are not, that's not what they're there for.
They're going to get paid.
They don't want to go to the G League. A lot of these kids are not mature enough to go to Europe, right? They need to play college basketball. College basketball needs them to play college basketball. But what you can't have is this shamockery of, well, we're amateur athletes. And we're not getting paid, and we're just here to get an education. No, you're not. You're here to get paid.
Yeah.
Okay, so while you're here, I'm going to let you sign autographs. While you're here, I'm going to let you sell T-shirts to the student body with your name on them. And hey, by the way, if we put you in a video game, we're going to give you a nickel for every game that sells. Right? I mean, if you're there 4 years, you get more money. You get a bigger slice of the pie. There's ways to tailor this stuff that will really lessen the impact of corruption
of
financial advisors.
Ever go away altogether?
No, because where there's mass amounts of money, this is a $1 billion industry. Where there's mass amounts of money, you're always going to have corruption. And maybe that's jaded on my part. I prefer to think that I'm a realist. If you listen to my show on a daily basis, you know that I'm a realist. I believe in dealing in the truth. And the truth is where there's billions of dollars to be made, there's going to be corruption.
Yeah.
When you have a lead assistant of Sean Miller's who's been in his employ for 10 years, Sean Miller knows exactly the character of that man and what he's doing to operate.
Yep.
I deal in truth. My truth in the Arizona situation is if Arizona was smart, they'd terminate Sean Miller. Because that's what's best for the University of Arizona. It's why they fired... You know, Rich Rod, the controversy around Rich Rod. Now, the other day it comes out. When your football coach is being leveraged for $7.5 million by a former employee over what, and I don't even want to get into the salacious details of it, but essentially he was being blackmailed for $7.5 million. That tells you that his moral compass didn't exactly point north.
Yeah.
Right? So you have now your football coach involved in a salacious scandal, and now your basketball coach was allegedly, and now I don't believe it, but was allegedly caught on an FBI wiretap. Right? Okay, well, that's not true. Yeah, but he was alleged to have been caught on an FBI wiretap. discussing a $100,000 payment after his lead assistant of a decade was caught in an FBI trap,
yeah,
indicted and prosecuted, and you fired him. And you don't think there's a problem with this head coach. You think this head coach is, oh, just, man, I have had,
well, let me tell you, folks,
I've had a run of bad luck that not many have seen.
I highly doubt the university itself doesn't see that there's an issue with Sean Miller. I think the perspective is more, you know, are we going the damage control route, or are we just cutting the head off this thing and saying, yeah, see you later? I mean, that's clearly the perspective here. I mean, it's not a that you can't be. No, you're not innocent. Like, well, that's the thing, though.
There's no damage control.
Exactly. So you're either going to just take your beating and understand that, you know, hey, we're just going to go along for the ride, and it is what it is, and we'll do the best we can. Or we're going to be proactive and do X, Y, and Z and hope for the best result.
What would you do?
I'd fire him. I'd let him go. I mean, I agree with you. I think you can't. There's no denying. If Book Richardson had never happened, this is a different story. But yeah, it did happen, and so this is where we are.
Yeah. And our good friend Bear Down Steve on Twitter, he's a huge Arizona fan, Steven Molina on Twitter. You know, like, he's ripping Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So Kyle Kuzma of My R and We, the LA Lakers.
Just Kyle Kuzma.
The Kuz.
Nobody big.
Kyle Kuzma.
Mm-hmm.
Was Kyle Kuzma a big-time college basketball player?
No.
No, he was not.
Nope.
He is the surprise. He is the steal of the draft.
Yep.
Kyle Kuzma is alleged to have taken money while he was at Utah.
About 10 grand.
There are no ties to the program. There's nothing that implicates Larry Krzyzkowiak, the head coach at Utah. There's nothing that implicates any of his assistants, any of his teammates, nothing. What it looks like, based on a ledger, Yahoo Sports got their hands on ledgers and from, you know, ASM Sports Management. And what it looks like is Kyle Kuzma took some money on his own outside of the program,
mm-hmm,
which happens almost on a daily basis to football players and basketball players and baseball
athletes,
players and hockey players, and it happens all the time. And this Yahoo story is pervasive. You it shows you, it's a ledger from a sports agent, a now defunct sports agent, who was making payments to athletes. This happens all the time. This doesn't mean Larry Krzyzkowiak's got to be fired. See, because yeah, Larry didn't have a lead assistant of 10 years that was caught up in an FBI scandal.
Bro, Larry wasn't out there fishing.
Yeah. Larry Krzyzkowiak, and it's ridiculous that Steve Molina keeps saying, well, you got to fire everybody at Utah. Dude, if you think Larry Krzyzkowiak is buying players, you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Right? Ask any Ute fan. He's not buying players, yeah, right? Like, it's not happening.
Yeah.
I understand that Arizona fans are frustrated. USC fans are frustrated. But USC fans have a unique thing in that their program's always been scandal-ridden. The problem for Arizona Wildcat fans is you're still trying to figure out who's replacing Lute Olson, who's one of the classiest, best coaches of all time, and a good human being, a nice man, a really good coach. Was he 100% clean? I doubt it. I don't know, but I don't even think, like,
I don't
Coach
think
K
anybody
is 100%
clean. 100% clean.
Like, right? I mean,
everyone's got violations from minuscule to massive.
Arizona's in real trouble here.
But that's why you got to be proactive.
Yes.
You have to get out in front of this thing, get rid of Sean Miller and anybody who's related to him in his program, so I guess everybody, and start fresh.
Should the G League be more prominent than it is? Should athletes in college who are taking money, who want to play professional ball now, should those athletes be considering the G League? Should they make changes where there's more money or more sponsorship? Or if Lonzo Ball doesn't want to go to UCLA, if LaMelo wants to not go to Lithuania,
right?
And him and Colangelo want to go
by the way, they did, and they're doing just fine.
They're doing just fine. They are, actually, because Lithuania basketball blows. Anyway, point is, should there be a better G League?
What does better mean, though? Because I feel like when you talk about a league being better, a lot of better is predicated on the level of talent in the league, and the only place you're getting that talent from is college basketball or high school. You could just skip college and go right to the G League, which I think is a good alternative to Europe. But the thing that guys don't like about it is they're not going to make as much money as they would in college.
They're not. But so that's right there. That is the very question.
Yeah.
Should the G League be should the G League be better funded? Should the G League grow it? Because that's what LeBron says.
But would that, that be good for the NBA?
Oh, it would be very good because college basketball is no longer a feeder system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like college football is truly the feeder system for the NFL.
Right.
There's competition for college basketball now, and kids are arriving at the NBA, in my opinion, just not prepared to excel.
Right.
And now there are guys like, and who's a recent, Trey Burke comes to mind, who's finally finding it looks like his footing with the Knicks. But Trey Burke was an awesome college basketball player at Michigan. He has not been a very good pro. Like with Utah and Washington, he was just not a good basketball player.
Yeah.
So my question is college basketball helping or hurting the NBA product? I think it's a case-by-case basis. I look at this past draft. I look at guys like Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson hasn't been what they hoped he would be.
He's been horrible
in
for the first, most of the first half.
Yeah, it's been
just
rough.
Now kind of spreading his wings a little bit, kind of getting into the flow of the game, you know, starting to play better with Devin Booker.
Yeah.
And that shows you just how much of a developmental curve there is from college to NBA. Because Josh Jackson dominated in college. I mean, clearly, that's why he was top five.
He was an excellent college
player. Like, you know, so I just...
But had maturity issues.
Exactly.
Not to be a dick, but
no,
he had...
No, but it's true.
He had
it's
this
true.
Issue where he had this woman allegedly trapped in a car, and he was beating the heck out of the car, and she was terrified, and... Like, that's a legitimate thing. But I start looking at the mock drafts for 2018, and I look at guys like Luka Doncic.
Luka Doncic, good example. The reason he is better fit for the NBA than, let's say, a one-and-done college kid is Luka's been playing.
He's a professional basketball player.
He's a professional player. He understands. And this is what I think people just don't realize. Being a pro versus being an amateur is so much different in the day-to-day. Being a college kid is just so much different. The only thing you have to do is go to practice, get on the bus, and eat at the training table. You don't really have a ton of media in your face every night. I mean, occasionally, if you're the best guy, maybe you have one interview once in a while. The NBA, you got media every day, it seems like. You got more grueling practice. The scheduling is probably, what, twice as grueling at least?
Oh, at least.
At least?
At least.
You know, because the travel is 10 times what they are in college. So I just think there's a lot more to being a pro.
But I look at the mock drafts, and it, depending on who you like, a Doncic or like DeAndre Ayton is a legitimate.
Yeah.
Like, I think the Suns would do well to draft Ayton over Doncic because I'm not a huge European guy.
Right.
But you look at, you know, I look at who's third in the draft. Like right now it would be Orlando.
Hmm.
I mean, there's a number of they need a 3-4. They need a wing scorer. So a Marvin Bagley comes to mind from Duke. You know, maybe a Michael Porter, maybe somebody like that. I look at a team like Dallas. You know, they're looking at Mohamed Bamba from Texas. Makes perfect sense. Played at Texas, going to play with the Mavericks. Okay, I like that. Trae Young falling all the way to 7. For the Cleveland Cavaliers is Trey, who, by the way, I think a lot of people are surprised how much Trey Young has struggled the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I just look up and down, you know, some of this draft board. There's not a whole lot of hope in this draft that you're going to draft a guy and he is instantly going to be a superstar. DeAndre Ayton may be that guy. Mm-hmm. Luka Doncic might be that guy. I don't know. I don't think so. But I don't think there's a whole lot of instant hits. Look at this past draft.
Yeah.
I mean, this past June, you were very hit and miss on the NBA draft right now. The top 10 guys, there's not a whole lot of star talent there. So,
no, there's not.
I don't know. Is LeBron right? The NCAA is certainly corrupt. I agree with him
question.
On that. But is there a way to change the system where you can start an NBA feeder system like the G League? If you take the G League, do you believe that you can either inject more cash? Because that's what it is. You'd have to inject more cash, have more sponsors.
You can. Yeah.
So is that the solution?
It just needs to be a grander product, right? Like, that's how you get more influx of money. It needs to be a bigger product. It needs to be more televised. It needs to be this and that. There's a lot that goes into it. But the point here is that, yeah, if you can grow the G League into a feeder system and maybe guys are skipping college, the one-and-dones are no longer one-and-dones, they're G League guys, that could be a game changer.
Well, I look at a lot of the kids that are going to be drafted in June, I don't know. I have hope for Trae Young. Jaren Jackson at Michigan State, his dad was a basketball player, so you kind of have hope for him.
Yeah.
But I look at somebody like Shareef O'Neal, who is caught up in this Arizona scandal.
Yeah.
He is decommitted from Arizona.
Being proactive.
Should he be going to the G League?
I wouldn't blame him.
Or should he be going to Duke? Should he be going to, like, how are you going to go to Michigan State with this Larry Nassar situation?
You're not.
Right? How are you going to go to any of these schools realistically and be anything more than a guy who plays one season, drops out of school, and is preparing to play in the NBA in 2 years? I don't see, if you're a guy like Shareef O'Neal, you're not. You're preparing to play in the NBA, period.
Yeah.
That's all this is.
It's that simple. Yeah. And I think if you can, like, I'm somebody who believes in incentivizing people to do their job. So I think if you can come up with a set of rules for guys in the G League, hey, if you do X, Y, and Z, you're put into a different category. Or, I mean, there's so many ways that you can,
I agree,
you can streamline the process and get guys to come to the G League. I think it's a viable option. But I agree that it needs to be a grander product. The G League is really nothing right now. It's just a lot of guys. It's a lot of 4A players, essentially.
And LeBron today said the NCAA is corrupt. The kids need an alternative.
Yeah.
And I agree with him. And LeBron James knows that. Remember, LeBron James.
How much of an advocate has LeBron James been this year? I mean, the guy has just talked on so many topics.
Because he's at a different place in his life now.
But still,
the end is coming for LeBron. He sees that.
Yeah.
You know, and whether that is shut up and dribble, that controversy last week with Laura Ingram, the way he handled that. I mean, the maturity, the off-court LeBron, the adult LeBron. Because remember, LeBron's son, Bronny, is now a rated player.
How much pressure has that kid got?
Oh, man. But he's really good.
Oh, he is really good.
He's really good.
Yeah, totally.
So I think LeBron James is in a different situation now. He's a different person now. And I think that's really important. And as we go through politics and the way politics have changed in our country, and if you look at the way that LeBron has spoke out or KD has spoken out, or if you look at any of these athletes, this is why I always say LeBron has more influence than Donald Trump. You might not like that, but I think
like
it's
it.
True.
I like it a hell of a lot.
Yeah. And you're one of the guys you're that millennial generation that is going to be charged with really changing the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think LeBron is doing a lot to make sure that that happens. And LeBron's doing a lot to make sure that
LeBron's
millennials...
LeBron's pulling his weight when it comes to that. And I can appreciate that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Anyway, hey, real quick, LeBron said something else I want to talk about. He said that this has become a shooter's league for officials. He said shooters are getting calls, refs are protecting shooters, and they're not protecting drivers anymore. What did you think of that?
You know, I think that he's half right. I think when guys like Pachulia are sidelining Kawhi Leonard because he's stepping under Kawhi on a jump shot.
And, was Zaza dirty when he fell on top of Russ?
I think he was. I don't buy the... I mean, yeah, Nick Young's foot hooked his leg, but Zaza is 260, 270. I don't buy that his foot pulled him all the way down like that. I mean, and he could have avoided Westbrook, no question about it. So, yeah, he is a dirty player. There's no doubt about it. To be clear, I'm not a Warriors homer. I may be a KD homer, but I'm not a Warriors homer. But Pachulia is dirty. There is no doubt about that.
No question about it.
Him and Dellavedova are in their own little categories, dirty players.
I would agree.
With regard to LeBron's comments, I think the league is catered to three-point shooting because that's where the game has gone. You have guys like Harden, and obviously Curry's the forefront of that. You know, taking more threes, deeper threes, and they're playing more of a perimeter game. And I think when you look at the officiating setup, having three guys in a triangle trying to cover every angle, it's just not enough eyes, honestly.
Fourth
official would be huge because then you've got a box. There are so many different angles to play at and work with. And I think when the play is that far away from the hoop, I think there's just it's hard to get the correct angle, and the game moves so quickly. This is the NFL problem. The game moves so quickly that it's hard to make a good call. And so when LeBron...
But that doesn't... And not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but that doesn't mean that you should make the James Harden Wilson Chandler call the other night. And if you didn't see it, follow me on Twitter. The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show on Twitter. James Harden jumps straight up into Wilson Chandler on a three-point shot.
Chandler playing good defense.
Chandler's arms are down to the point where James Harden hits Chandler in the mouth with his bicep. and they call the foul on Wilson Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in awe of
Kobe.
That.
That goes back. Kobe started that.
Yeah, but your boy KD continued that.
Well,
for
but
sure.
See, Kate, I feel like there's two separate situations. So the James Harden Wilson Chandler move is you know the defender's leaning into you and you just rise up with your shoulders
sure,
into
yes.
him and they call that a foul.
Correct.
KD essentially invented the swing foul where the ball is on like your right hip and you swing through the defender's arm and that's a foul. And they called that for a season and then they corrected that. So I think those are two different situations.
Well, I think they still call it, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they do still call it sometimes. I think it's not as egregious.
I think
but
defenders corrected that.
Well, yeah, that's probably
guys
true.
Guys adjusted
that's
very
true.
Quickly.
Well, you have to. You don't have a choice. But I just think the fourth official would be huge, in my opinion. I think LeBron is right that, yeah, he probably doesn't get – there's no doubt he doesn't get every single call. But I think he needs to own some of that. When you're driving as much as he's driving and you're creating as much contact as he is,
yes.
he's got to own some of that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. So we agree that there should be a fourth official. I do want to also real quick get to one NFL story. We've been real slow on NFL lately because there's not a lot going on.
There's too much going on in the NCAA, man.
Yeah, right. Did you hear that Papa John's and the NFL have mutually parted ways?
Oh.
Papa John's, for those of you who don't remember, came out and ripped Colin Kaepernick and NFL players and had a huge fight with the NFL ratings, saying that those poor ratings cost them sales. Well, in a statement released today, it's pretty remarkable that, quote, the NFL and Papa John's have made a mutual decision to shift from their official league sponsorship to a focus on partnerships with 22 NFL teams. Presence in the broadcast and digital media, and key personalities in the sport, the league and company said in a joint statement. So they have pulled way back. They are not going to be all up in the every yeah. commercial break, and it's pretty remarkable. The company will continue to invest in the NFL through its local market deals with 22 teams.
Yeah.
So they will focus on the Chicago Bears.
The Bears.
They'll focus on local markets where they feel like they can, hey, if the Bears win, you get a free topping on your pizza.
Why
or you
is
get
it
a
so
large.
Wrong to just say, hey, look, Roger Goodell and the NFL, our return on the national level is not enough for us to keep investing. So we're going to invest in local markets and get our return that way, and the numbers still work out.
Because of the way Papa John's handled that.
Yeah.
Papa John Schnatter was a real dick about it.
He
I
was.
Mean, the guy was.
He was.
I mean, and look, here's this is my thing with Papa John's. I don't love your product, right? So your product is okay.
The last time, I can't tell you the last time I've had one of their pies.
It's okay. I think I've probably only had Papa John's once or twice in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. When Costco pizza is better than you, your product's just okay. So when you're out in front, like Papa John was, you can't be a jerk.
Yeah.
You can't act like an yeah. idiot. And he continued to do that. That's what hurt him. And yes, it may have popped their sales for a couple of weeks when this whole controversy was going on. The NFL, for all of its shortcomings, is still a behemoth.
Oh, absolutely.
It is still one of the biggest brand driving forces in this country.
It's the biggest sport in the country. There's no doubt about it.
So you need the relationship. If you change the way you're spending your money, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But if anybody really believes that Papa John's is better without the NFL, I think that's
it's
ridiculous.
It's not logical. I mean, it's not. It's just what you said. I mean, the NFL's, the size of their brand is unquestioned. So, I mean, it's really more of a, hey, they clearly don't like something in the national relationship, which I get it.
I think they didn't like the fact that they lost 12 points on their stock price, 12% rather, 12 percentage points. I believe that's right. When they got into this fight with the NFL, their stock dropped 12%.
Well, that's because there's other options for pizza. Yeah. And when your product, again, not to hate on Papa John's, but when you're there's a difference between being, you know, one of several and being the absolute outright best at what you do. And they are not the best. They are one of many.
Yeah, let's talk about really bad drivers
okay.
for a moment before we get to Major League Baseball. I am a former Utah resident, loved every second I lived in the state of Utah. I miss it every day.
Every day.
One of the best places I've ever lived, and trust me, I have lived in a lot of places. Today, they advanced a package. It's not law yet, but they advanced a bill that would allow Utah drivers to run red lights when there are no other cars present. This is a bad idea.
They need to strictly define what no other cars present means.
This is a really bad idea. Utah drivers are second only to Arizona drivers for bad driving. Okay, I've lived in California, Illinois, Indiana, Florida. Like, I've spent time around the world, around the country.
Yeah.
UK drivers, way better. European drivers, way. Canadian drivers, way better. Michigan drivers, better. Utah drivers, horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona drivers, even worse. So please don't let Utah drivers run red lights, please. I'm begging you. This is me. This is me begging the state of Utah. This is Uncle Monty.
Hello, I would like to speak as Uncle Monty.
Please do not allow drivers in Utah to freely run red lights, please. Uncle Monty.
Well, it's not unfiltered, but, you know, for the most part, you're going to have a pretty good... Like, this is the whole red light camera thing, right? Like, so if you run
which I am totally opposed to.
If you run a red light and there's cars present and a cop gets you for that, I mean, it needs to be clearly defined, bro. Like, what does cars present mean? Are we talking 2 feet, 10 feet? Like, what does that mean?
I don't know. It means it's a mistake.
It means, the only logical answer to that question in my mind is, okay, well, that means no cars present means there's nobody trying to turn across the intersection. That's what that means.
No, it means there should be no other cars in the intersection. This is pointed at our way to the gym. That's what this is. This is pointed on, we go to the gym every morning at 5 a.m.
Why?
And we sit at red lights.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have to do that. I'll admit, I run red lights all the time.
All the time.
When there's no other cars present, I do the Utah and I run the light, right?
Yeah.
Utah drivers are not capable of judging this problem. I'm telling you, this will end poorly.
Yeah.
Please don't let this happen in Park City. Make this only a Salt Lake County law then. I don't know.
It's not good.
Don't.
State Street's going to have a lot of trouble.
Don't. You shouldn't do that. This is a mistake. Am I a good driver? I know I ask you this all the time.
Yeah, you're a good driver. You're just terribly impatient. You have zero patience.
What does that mean?
Like, for anybody who doesn't drive 80 in a 65, just zero patience.
Just to cover driving pet peeves real quick, and I would love you to tweet me your pet peeves, yeah. The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show on Twitter. Use your turn signal. How difficult is it to use your turn? There's only two real rules that I have. Okay, don't be an asshole. One. Okay. And use your turn signal. Oh, three rules. Okay, don't be an asshole. Use your turn signal. And don't hold your phone in your hand.
Well, yeah.
I don't have any problem with people talking on their phones. But don't hold it in your hand.
Well, the irony is too much for me. Like, you can't... Why would you hold it in your hand when you have Bluetooth in your car?
I like holding it in my hand.
Okay, relax.
Oh, the phone.
Yeah.
The point is, I don't know. And it would be different if this was an 85 Chevelle and some bro in his hoopty. Right. Okay, that's one thing. But this is like a 2017 Lexus.
Lexus. Like all the luxury
brands.
Lexus,
like every, Benz,
but here's
Beamer.
The thing. It's not even the German car. It's all cars.
That, yes.
Like past 2008, 2009, every car's got Bluetooth. It's that simple.
Hmm. People are asking. So we...
Conti in, bro.
You need to follow us on Twitter so that you can watch us on Periscope. Because
Hello, beautiful.
We moved into a new house... And my beautiful Chelsea FC flag had been missing for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
We got a new one. And mm-hmm. we hung it up so it's on the podcast every day.
Yeah.
On Periscope, which you can find on my Twitter feed, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Without question, no hesitation, Conti in. Antonio! Antonio! That's right, my friends, Chelsea football.
Hold on, wait, pause. Pause. You got him start. You guys.
This is your fault, Periscope.
Periscopers, you got him started fault. On all this stuff he's about to say. Okay, go.
Now look, the Barcelona match was frustrating. Our young defender Christensen made a mistake. Otherwise, we're up 1-0.
Well, that was after he got concussed, but and we're not talking about that.
No, no, no. This was Champions League. The concussion thing was the United match.
That was the United match, my bad.
The United match was even more frustrating because, well, it'd be nice if we could hit the net.
Right.
Like, if our shots were on goal, Chelsea would have scored four games again. Four goals.
Or if the officials weren't out to get them, but, you know.
But the the officiating was horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous. I do have some questions about, you know, Morata and why he was first choice. I don't know. Why did he sub off Hazard? I don't know. I'd like to see Fabregas more. I think Rudiger's been very average. I love Christensen. I don't think there's any other choice. At some point, you're going to have to go younger, and you're going to have to start playing like. A lot of people are still upset about the Mishy Batshuayi transfer. I'm telling you that transferring Batshuayi to Dortmund, and really it's a loan, by the way, and they didn't sell him. Dortmund wanted to buy him, and they said no. And I'm good with that.
Periscope says Conte's football is too mechanical.
It is a little bit. It would be nice if there was a little more
fluidity.
Not even fluidity, just a little more creativity. It sometimes in Antonio Conte's system, it takes out the creativity of the individual, right? So I look at a guy like Lukaku, who, yes, he probably should still be in blue, but whatever, that's a longer discussion. But I look at Lukaku. Lukaku has a lot more freedom than did a Diego, than does a Morata. Like Giroud, it still bothers me. Giroud is in our shirt because he's an Arsenal man he's an Arsenal guy. I don't want, and I like Giroud and I like what little bit we've seen of him, but I'm never going to accept him fully because of his time at Arsenal. I won't. It's why I'm still disappointed in Lampard for going to City and why I don't love the fact that. And I know we did him a favor in sending him there, but like Peter Cech should have never gone to Arsenal.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to hell. Don't go to Arsenal. Like, hell's better. Why are you going to Arsenal? Right? Like, anyway, here, nor there. Olivier Giroud should be first choice. Morata needs to probably be on the bench. He needs to sit. So we could go round and round about this. Antonio, this club is better for Periscope. Chelsea is a better club with Antonio Conte on the bench as our manager, using his tactics, his style, the way. And if you watch the Barcelona Champions League match, that's why Antonio Conte needs to be the coach of this team, the manager of this team, the tactician of this team, because Conte has the ability to study an opponent and design a system that works for them against them. Everybody was like, well, there's no striker. There was a reason for that. You know, my question is, and the creativity thing about Conte is very true. Like, Willian is suffering under Antonio Conte. We're only getting little flashes, little looks at Willian. And a lot of times it's because I think the mechanical phrase is a really good one from Periscope. Because I feel like the tactics that are deployed on Willian by Antonio Conte limit his ability to be creative. And right now, for a club like Chelsea that's struggling so much to finish, you need to kind of take the reins off. You need to let Hazard free. And in this stretch where you are very busy, this is a very busy season for Chelsea, I think you have to prioritize a top four finish. I don't think you can prioritize the Champions League. As much as it pains me to say that, I don't think you can prioritize the Champions League, because if you do, you're not going to be in it next year. And that's my biggest concern for Chelsea, is that we're going to miss the Champions League next year. Because right now, let's just be brutally honest and say we're not a top four club. We're not City or United. We're not Liverpool, who I think is playing wonderful football right now. But are you telling me that Spurs are better than we are? Spurs are not better than we are. That's not a more cohesive team. They don't even have a freaking home right now. And they're doing this. I don't know how to fix this club, but I'd love the 10 outfield players to be the same for a month. And I would love if Giroud would be first choice. And I'd love if Willian would be if William would be placed in a position where he can just run free. And I think, sadly, I still don't think we have a replacement for Fabregas. Because Sesha, I think, is still one of the most important guys on the club because he knows how to deliver the football.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to put the ball in a place where guys like... And I'm also, by the way, the guy that says that no Fabregas means no Moses. Like, with all due respect to Moses, he's only as good as the guy delivering him the football.
Yeah.
Which is not the case, like, for Alonso. I think Alonso is good on his own. But I think Moses needs a lot of help to succeed. And Fabregas is the guy that's doing that. So I could go on and on about Chelsea. It's really something that pisses me off. I don't like losing.
I told you.
Let's talk a little Major League Baseball because, by the way, Cubs win. They beat the White Sox today. You know, I look at this Major League Baseball grievance, and I think it's got real legs. If you did not hear about this, the Major League Baseball Players Association filed a grievance against the Rays, A's, Marlins, and Pirates for a lack of spending. And really, they're targeting the Rays here because the Rays this year will get $130 million of free money before they even ever get a dollar from any baseball revenue. They're getting that via the revenue share, their TV deal, the new streaming deal is ridiculous how much money they're making. And next year, their TV deal is going to triple because they're making a new TV deal.
Yeah, I think at some point you have to make teams spend. At some point, you're going to have to spend money and get talent. I understand if you need to rebuild, which means sending your talent out and then reinvesting in talent. Okay, yes. I get that. I understand that. That's part of the process of winning, of, you know, the flow of an organization. You go on runs in baseball, you know, 4 to 5 year runs where you win, and then all your guys get too old to win anymore, so you ship them out. And then you suck for 3 or 4 years, and then you get good again. But the key to getting good again is spending. You have to spend, and you have to draft well, and you have to develop. Well,
and the Rays have stripped this team of just about any valuable player. And you're going to see a very young team. Yeah, you're going to see a very young team. And in some places, I think that's okay. But it can't be the Rays, the A's, the Marlins, the Pirates not spending the revenue share money they're getting.
Yeah.
Because the whole reason they're getting that money is so they can be competitive, and they're not being competitive.
Yeah, they're not trying to win.
Those teams
and
have seen those teams all have seen a significant reduction in their payroll, which I don't like. By the way, the other part of this is the free agency situation. So
we still
have Arrieta, Lynn, Cobb, and Holland are all still free agents as pitchers.
Oh, you wouldn't want any of those guys on your team, right?
Cargo and Moustakas are probably the two best position players. I don't know when this changes. Jake Arrieta had talked to Philadelphia last week, but that deal didn't come to fruition.
Nothing hasn't caught traction.
I mean, you have three quality starters. You have Greg Holland, who's a very good closer.
Excellent.
I mean, I got to believe those four guys will get jobs. I got to think Carlos Gonzalez is going to get a job. I don't know what to say about Mike Moustakas, because apparently if he wants a job, I think he's going to have to take a one-year deal, which is insanity.
I think it all depends on... The players own some of this because they need to understand what their value is, and in a time when teams are not paying the way they used to, currently, you got to understand that you got to do what J.D. Martinez is and take them the best offer you can get. And I hate that, but it's the truth. So if you're a guy like Moustakas and you're waiting for money, at some point you just got to give in and take that money and then fight another day.
I look at a team like the Padres.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Hosmer,
who
I think is a great signing, who was very good for them. I think he's a great example of spending money. Yeah. By the way, did you see what he did today?
Mm-hmm.
He bought Glenn Hoffman, the third base coach, who wore number 30 last year, a Rolex, because Hosmer's wearing number 30 this year. So I think that's a really good way to buy a number. He got paid. But I look at Hosmer, the San Diego Padres, who I would call a medium market team.
They're trying to win.
Yeah, they're spending big money. Hosmer's the richest Padre in the history of the organization. They're spending money. I don't know how you fix this. I don't know if there is fixing this. Major League Baseball's got a real problem in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Does Major League Baseball work in the state of Florida?
I wouldn't.
I don't know if it works. The Rays were really close to winning a championship and didn't. The Marlins have won multiple World Series titles.
But...
and they're going through a rebuild. I have more faith that Derek Jeter and the Marlins are going to get rebuilt than I do the Rays. I don't think the Rays will ever spend money. I don't think they'll ever develop talent. And I think they'll always trade their best players.
Well, I don't know. I think I understand why you would draw that conclusion. I think it's too early to tell. I mean, I think they spent money to win before, so it's not out of the question they would do it again.
They're
but
asking
at this point,
taxpayer contribution for a new stadium. Who on God's green earth is going to contribute to a new stadium for the Rays?
Nobody.
And that's insanity. Right? That's insanity. They're going to, they need to, in my opinion, they need to move. The state of Florida, God love you, the state of Florida doesn't need two major league teams. I'm not even sure they need one.
They need an NBA team. I'm not sure they need a hockey team. And they need
spring
training.
Well, the Lightning are the best team in the NHL right now.
Yeah, well, right now they are, but they hadn't been great for a long time.
But they've won consistently.
Yeah.
Like the NHL, in the Panthers have won. Listen, I'm telling you, man, hockey's not a problem. Football's not a problem. College football's not a problem.
Basketball's
not a problem. Okay? Baseball in Florida is a problem, and that sounds moronic to say that because of the history and tradition of spring baseball in Florida. But Major League Baseball has been damaging. Maybe the right way to say it is, Major League Baseball has been damaged by the state of Florida with the way the Rays have run themselves. It's embarrassing.
Image-wise, yeah.
It's embarrassing.
They've taken a beating with it, but it doesn't – again, I think you can't – still, at the end of the day, you can't get away from the fact that this whole owner's collusion thing, you're not getting away from that. It's not happening. The fight
I think
will
it's
continue.
Impossible. I think it's impossible to tell whether they colluded or not. I don't know that we'll ever
see
that.
Who's got a better chance of proving collusion, Colin Kaepernick or the Major League Baseball players?
Congress about Russia.
There you go.
Shohei Ohtani, mm-hmm. Have you been impressed with what you've seen?
So far,
did you hear what he said today?
I think he was a better – he's shown that his mechanics are good enough to be successful in Major League Baseball. He can throw well. Hitting is the problem. It's a problem.
Shohei Ohtani today said he won't be a major leaguer until opening day. And it continues this pattern of humility out of him that I think is really endearing him to his teammates. And I think it's really helping him. Because he's not showing up here.
He's not Yasiel Puig-ing it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He doesn't feel entitled to anything. He has not hit real well yet. But hit the way that fastball.
I think that will come.
He's got three legitimate pitches, Ohtani, and we've seen him twice now. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see him against the Cubs on Thursday. We'll be at the game. Ohtani's got a legitimate 97 to 99 fastball. He's got a legitimate split, and he's got a very sharp curveball.
He's got a big arm. There's no doubt about that. And I think he will find success pitching. To what level of success, I'm not sure. I don't know if he's ace quality like he was made out to be. I do think he's top end of the rotation for sure.
Can you expect him to hit and be a pitcher?
I don't believe anybody can do that.
I think it's too hard to get guys out than to turn around because if 70% of your time is spent pitching, you're only going
to
spend 30% of the time trying to barrel up a major league pitcher's fastball.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that somebody can over 162 games be good enough to pitch every 5 days and then hit two of those days. I don't buy it.
One more baseball story. Mm-hmm. Well, there's many more, but
of course,
this Brandon Belt concussion story. I subscribe to the Atlantic, by the way. If you don't subscribe to the Atlantic, you're crazy. Andrew Baggerly, San Jose Mercury News, Comcast.
Yes.
You know, he's a great baseball writer. He wrote a piece for the Atlantic describing Brandon Belt's concussion that he got last August.
Dude, this
when he
is
got
scary.
Hit on the head with a curveball, and the fact that Belt just didn't want to go out. Like, he stayed in his room, had tremendous, tremendous depression, would go to the park after the game started and leave before it ended so he didn't have to interact with his teammates. Like, just all of this stuff. His wife didn't recognize him. He did, like, he felt in the story is quoted talking about how his 3-year-old son would run up to him and be like, "Hey, I want to play, let's play." And Belt was like, I don't want to play with you. Like, in his head, he was thinking, I don't want to play with this kid. I want to go back to bed.
Yeah.
And he said, how do I say to my three-year-old kid, I don't want to play with you? Like, that's where Brandon Belt was. He's had four or five major concussion issues that started at Texas. He played at UT. He got hit on the ear hole in Texas. And Brandon and I have talked about this. I knew Belt pretty well when I was in San Francisco. He didn't think he'd recover from that concussion at Texas. And it's plagued him throughout his career. He got kneed in the head once. I think he got hit on a throw, and then he got hit in the head with a pitch. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been a real problem. He's had four to five, and it almost ended his career. Imagine what a running back in the NFL is dealing with.
No, I'm like, good. I'm good. I'll pass.
This concussion stuff is terrifying.
I will pass.
It's absolutely terrifying to me. And I don't know how you continue.
I mean, the NFL is just a beating, and I get that it's something some guys have to do. It's something that some guys choose to do. But at some point, it's just not worth it. And I don't know. I think that's a case-by-case basis. Each person has to make that choice. Like, what is the line? When does this become a negative return instead of a positive return? But you don't see this issue in Major League Baseball very often. And so when you hear about guys telling their kids that they don't want to play with them, I think that's – it's just rough. Like, you don't hear that very much. You don't hear that side.
By the way, speaking of the Giants – mm-hmm. They're in a battle with the Diamondbacks as we're taping this show. Mm. How about Jeff Samardzija? Inning and a third, three hits, four runs, two earned, a walk, and a K. Or Taijuan Walker, one inning, two hits, an earned run, two Ks. You had Archie Bradley go an inning and a third, two hits, four earned, three walks, a strikeout, and a bomb. There were some ugly pitching lines in this game. It's 14-12. The Giants just took the lead.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Go deep, boys.
I love the spring. By the way, John Lester named the starting pitcher for the Chicago Cubs opening day starter. Surprised that he got that nod over you?
No, because I think he's...
Not you personally, you, Darvish.
Okay, yeah, you're funny. We get it.
We get it.
I think it's not surprising. I think John Lester is one of the leaders in the clubhouse. And I think he deserves that spot. It's that simple. And I think I'm not a Yu Darvish as a number one believer. I'm not. I think he's a two. And in some rotations, elite rotations, he's a three. But for the Cubs, he's a two.
I think their rotation, their best possible rotation, Lester, Darvish, Quintana, Hendricks four, and Chatwood five. If Kyle Hendricks, who's going to be a Cy Young champion or a ERA champion, Cy Young contender, is your fourth best pitcher or number four in your rotation, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that's very good.
Yeah.
So I feel better about the Cubs than I have in some time, by the way.
Good.
So
that, it won't take long to reverse that, though.
No, tomorrow. By April, you're going to have to talk with. No, tomorrow. You're going to have to talk me off the ledge tomorrow, I guarantee it. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Until tomorrow, say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake. Nowhere to hide when I'm getting you close.